That long-running saga of the 2017 National Defense Authorization Bill rolls on into, what, Act 5 or 6? Now the House needs guidance going into its conference with the Senate. The Senate version makes big organizational changes to the Defense Department. House members need to figure out where they stand on that one. Meanwhile, the House Armed Services Committee called in some experts to put in their two cents as the two legislative bodies prepare to hammer out their differences on this bill. More now from Federal News Radio Scott Massioni.
The House and the Senate have passed the big defense policy bill for 2017, but before the bill can go to the president's desk, the two houses need to reconcile the differences between their bills. One of the biggest differences in the bills is the reforms to the Goldwater-Nichols Act. Goldwater-Nichols is a 30-year-old law that reorganized the Defense Department to handle Cold War threats. It's basically responsible for the way DoD runs today. But as the threat landscape has changed, those in Congress and in DoD have seen a need for some organizational changes. The Senate dug deep and recommended some pretty big overhauls for DoD's organization. The House, on the other hand, left things largely alone. But now that the two bills need to be reconciled, the House is playing catch-up on the Senate's reforms and deciding which ones it likes and which ones it'll push back on. If you don't remember what the Senate bill has in it, I honestly don't blame you. Unless you're a big policy wonk, this isn't the kind of thing you commit to memory. But it does have big repercussions. One of the biggest changes in the Senate bill mandates the Defense Department gets rid of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics. The position is third highest in the Department of Defense. Here's what former Deputy Secretary of Defense John Harmy told House Armed Services Committee about the provision.
We won the Cold War not because we had a larger military. We won the Cold War because we had superior technology on our side of the battlefield. And the Packard Commission, when it was formed, the Packard Commission wanted to make the Department of Defense a better buyer of things. They did not intend to diminish the DDR&E, but they did. In effect, we decapitated the head of the innovation ecosystem within the department. The Director of Defense Engineering and Research was the capstone of a system that put superior hardware into the hands of our soldiers. We lost that. And I will tell you right now, we are losing the innovation agenda between us and the Chinese and the Russians. We're falling behind. I don't think that you can turn the large organization of AT&L, and the numbers are between 1,500 and 2,500. I just can't get a good number. They will never become an innovation organization. They're a compliance organization. If we are going to restore innovation to the department, we have to create a lean, superior position in the department. The number three position in the department needs to be the chief innovation officer who's going to bring superior technology and put it in the hands of our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and marine going forward.
That's ultimately what the Senate bill is hoping to do. It will cut the acquisition office into two. One side will deal with day-to-day business, while the other side will focus on innovation and research. Dov Zakheim, a member of the Defense Business Board, had some choice words for the bureaucracy that he says is currently bogging down the acquisition office.
We have a very undereducated acquisition corps. There is no mandate that every single person who is in the acquisition business get up to speed on modern technology. You can get a master's degree and not go to another course again and wind up being in senior executive service. And if you'll come back and tell me, oh yes, there's the Defense Acquisition University, I ask you to take a look, go online and take a look at their curriculum, and then tell me if that is adequate. And I guarantee you, you won't. So it seems to me it's when you have a system that created its own rapid acquisition system to get around itself, which is what DoD did, something is fundamentally wrong. Now, the only question that arises if you want DoD to really focus on innovation is how do you reach out to the commercial sector? And the ways and means for doing that are not the ways and means we operate with right now.
Acquisition isn't the only area the committee wanted to take a look at. The Senate bill recommends moving some positions that are done by four-star generals to lower ranks. Some lawmakers are outraged by what positions might be demoted, which includes the Missile Defense Agency. The Senate bill would basically make across-the-board cuts to 25% of flag officer billets. The experts have a more judicious opinion. They want a 25% cut, but they want to give DoD a year to decide where to cut. Former U.S. Africa Command Chief Carter Hamm laid out the pros and cons of the cuts.
There are some modest savings in immediate staff of a four-star. Unsurprisingly, a four-star's immediate staff is a little bigger than a three-star, etc. but it's the downward effect of a four-star headquarters, then the cascading effect.
Right.
On the negative side, I think we ought to be a little cautious. Four stars get access to places that sometimes three stars can't.
Yes.
I'm most familiar with Europe. I was the last four-star Army Service Component Commander in Europe that my successors have all been three stars. It's been okay, but the reality is most of their counterparts are four stars.
Right.
There's access challenges. It was tough sometimes for me as a four-star to have a conversation with Russian counterparts. I know we're suspended from that right now. I've heard that the same is true with China. The Army for a long time had a three-star Army Service Component Commander in the Pacific. Difficult for that commander to have discussions with their Chinese counterpart. Easier now that Army component is a four-star. So there's balance.
Of course, the witnesses didn't advise the House to go along with everything in the Senate bill. One provision gives the joint staff more power in terms of guiding the military. Hamry ardently opposed that position.
The provision that's in the Senate bill that would authorize the chairman of the Joint Chiefs to do certain administrative functions, but put him in the chain of command. Here I would say, you know, this is a very important issue. This is an issue of almost constitutional significance. In our system, I mean, democracies always struggle. How do you control authoritarian organizations with guns? And that's what the Defense Department is. It's an authoritarian organization. There is authority, and people follow the chain of command. The way we have handled that problem in this democracy is by civilian control. Started by George Washington, who insisted on civilian control. Civilian control is to make sure only the president, and the president can never escape accountability for decisions to go to war. And you don't put the military in the way that confuses that, either to give him clouded judgment or to give him an excuse. Now, the provision that the joint staff is recommending is to let them do small administrative things. And I'd say civilian control is a toggle switch. It's on or it's off.
The House and Senate are set to begin conference in the coming weeks. In Washington, Scott Massioni, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.